McAfee has built PC health and performance tools right into the Security Center. You can safely remove unnecessary junk files and other temporary files that take up space on your computer. You can use the disk defragmenter and task scheduler included in the Security Center to schedule a regular time to automatically clean your PC.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, for the next hour, the views of Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And we're going to be talking about some of the most exciting and dangerous and times that we've seen in the financial markets for many years. Today, the stock market was down 350, 360 points. For a short period of time, why oil hit $90 a barrel, backed off a little bit. We see gold now rising steadily over the last week or so. We see the dollar continue to fall. Oh, we're being reassured that everything's in great shape. They've got a wonderful solution there. On Wall Street, they're going to borrow $100 billion, and that's going to get Citicorp out of the problems they're in, because they've got about $80 billion. That's $80 billion in SIVs, as structured investment vehicles, that are all very, very shaky. But there's nothing to worry about. Why they're going to get it straightened out? Is that right, Bob?
You know, you sound like a financial commentator.
Okay, well, good. Bob's been predicting this for a long time, so you pick up the story.
Well, you know, it's a pretty convoluted, involved thing. But to boil it down to a few words, the banks, in their ultimate greed, have bagged themselves. We have a number of problems. The collateralized debt obligations, which are packages of bonds, usually running anywhere between $1 and $30 billion in a package. Then we have asset-backed securities, which are composed of vehicle loans, motorcycle loans, loans on mobile homes, and pools and things like that. Now, you got to start at the beginning, and I'll do it very quickly. The Fed lowered interest rates to 1% in order to keep America from going into a depression in 2001. And we had forecast that there would be war, that there would be an event, and that all came into being. And the reason that we knew that they were going to do that is because of the financial trouble that they were going to have. And all governments have done that historically in the past. And so it wasn't too difficult to figure out. Then the result of those low interest rates was the giant housing bubble. And the basis of that bubble was not only the low rates, but the loan originators, mortgage companies, and banks given loans to anybody without any investigation whatsoever. Most of the people should have never had loans.
No, we're going to be back here in just a moment, but we're in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, go right ahead, Bob.
And so these loans were sold to investment bankers who in turn packaged them as CDOs. And they sold them to other professionals throughout the world. And most of them were retirement and pension funds and other banks, central banks. And they had a AAA rating on them. And of course, they weren't AAA. They were BBB, which is a light year away. And I guess nobody bothered to look to see whether they were AAA or they weren't. They just took the rating system and took the word of people like J.P. Morgan Chase and Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs and so on and on, these Wall Street types. Incidentally, I spent 28 years in Wall Street, and I own my own firm, so I'm familiar how everything works. And so the culmination of this was that the banks and the investment banks didn't get rid of all of the, we'll call it toxic junk. And the banks and the investment banks are stuck with, and this is just in the United States, with about $400 billion worth. And Citigroup, which is Citibank, says they have about $80 billion. Well, they probably have twice that because they never tell the truth. And you have all of these other entities who are loaded with them as well. And they don't know what to do because they can't sell them. They have no value. There has not been a market. And heretofore, they have valued them by marking them to model, which is marking them to a formula within a computer, which is not the real world. In other words, it's some fantasy valuation, if you may. And so you've got, not only in America or among the banking community, this terrible problem, which has caused a liquidity problem within those institutions. You have it also among these pension plans everywhere, and you have them in hedge funds, and none of these people can mark these assets in the market, and many of them have used them as collateral in order to borrow money. And a good example of that is the commercial paper business. That's when a corporation issues notes for 10 days or 30 days or 90 days, usually shorter term.
Hold on, I'll be right back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bob has just been explaining how this whole system works. And, of course, what you have is you have all these housing mortgages that are bundled into, and instead of it being a mortgage on a house, now it becomes part of a bond that may be worth that $1 to $10 billion or $30 billion. When you're dealing with sums of money like that, they're unrealistic. And certainly these bonds that are bought up by hedge funds and by pension funds and by banks, and then they, of course, can use that to borrow more money. They've got these bonds, they've got these assets. The only trouble is they aren't worth what they're supposed to be worth. They may only be worth 75 cents or 50 cents or 25 cents on the dollar, and so they've got a real problem now. These are assets, but they're not assets. And then, of course, we find increasing numbers of pension funds and banks suddenly, they want to borrow money, but they don't have anything to use as as security, because nobody certainly wants to take these what Bob calls toxic assets. They're really non-performing bonds as security. So suddenly you've got this tremendous amount of non-performing bonds out there, and nobody really knows what they have. And of course, Citicorp, which is the largest bank in the United States, has about $80 billion worth of these, and Bob thinks it's twice that much. Go ahead with the story, Bob.
Well, it also has infected the commercial paper market where companies go in and borrow money and they put up collateral. And out of $2.3 trillion, $1.2 trillion is collateralized by this toxic garbage. And that means that they can't roll that paper with that collateral. So they have to take the collateral back and put new collateral up, or they can't get a loan. And the borrowers know that they own this junk, and so they really don't want to give them any money at all, no matter what they put up. So they have to go someplace else, and they're going to the banks. And the banks are lending them money. Now, part of the lending that's been going on through the discount window, they lowered those rates a half a point, just like they lowered the rates on the prime rate a half a point. And the discount window, only banks go up to that window. And they've been borrowing money, and then they've been lending that money on an 8 or 10 to 1 basis to these companies.
Now, this is money they're borrowing from the Federal Reserve System you're speaking of.
That's correct.
Right.
And the Federal Reserve creates the money out of thin air. So that money is immediately, well, it's actually in the form of credit, which creates money, then immediately is extraordinarily inflationary. In fact, our money and credit figures came in for September at 14.7% increase.
That's almost 15%.
Yes, and it's over 50% a year.
And of course, that will reflect inflation in the years to come, probably next year or so. 15% inflation. Go ahead.
Well, the inflation I have projected for next year is over 15%, and that may be conservative. Now, your government is telling you that inflation's 2.75%. Even some of the Fed branches, part of the FOMC, the 13 banks that own the Federal Reserve, they're even talking 5 to 6% officially. We're talking 11.1, and that's going to go up very shortly. And I would suspect that this is not going to stop. Now, today, Citicorp announced that they have received an $80 billion loan to carry them through the end of the year. And they won't tell anybody who gave them the loan. Now, I want to tell you something. The corner pawnbroker doesn't have that kind of money.
$80 billion, no, nor do you or I. So where's the money coming from?
Well, there's only two conceivable places. Number one is the U.S. Treasury, which I kind of rather doubt because of the political implications. And the other is the Fed. And, of course, the Fed just miraculously created another $80 billion and handed it to Citicorp. And if you remember back in 1990, and of course that was a long time ago, but and most people didn't know this, but Citicorp was on its way to bankruptcy, and of course they're owners of the Fed, part of the ownership of the Fed. So the Fed stepped in, and they ran Citicorp for a year. And they put it straight up, and then it evolved from there, and they financed it and everything else. One of the things about Citigroup is that people go to work for them at the higher levels, make as much money as they can, and they leave. And how I know that is we have subscribers who have worked at the top echelons of Citicorp, so they tell us how things go there and how things evolve. We also have spies within many of the major banking and investment banking houses. So there's not much that they do that we don't know about. And, they may think they have all the security and everything. Well, I get news for them. We find out what they're doing. But anyway, you put it all together, and the banks won't lend to each other, most of them, because they're afraid that the balance sheet of the bank that they're lending to may be corrupted. on balance sheet are off. And a lot of these terrible problems are carried off balance sheet. And so, you have a situation where there's massive liquidity out there, but in certain sectors of the banking system, there is no credit available. And I know that sounds hard to believe, but it's true. And what's happening is the Fed is going to have to supply it all. I think we're probably looking at $2 to $3 trillion. It's hard to say. And then on top of that, we have the collapse not only of the CDOs and the ABSs, collapse and only a 5% fix-it rate on the commercial paper. Then we have about, my guess is, between $750 billion and $1.3 trillion in losses coming from the people who are going to be foreclosed on just in the next 18 months. Now, there are loans that were made at about this time last year, and they run 2 years, they're adjustable rate mortgages, and they're coming due again in another year. Plus, we have this tremendous amount of adjustable rate mortgages that are coming due, and this is the peak month right now. It'll taper off after this month until probably about this time next year. But you get a whole new crop coming in. And so, and tapering off, it'll go from a 10 to a 5. It's never going to go any lower than that because there's so many of these in the system, and they're still writing about 16 or 17% of mortgage loans as ABS loans, even though most ABS writers, the mortgage companies that have been writing this paper previously, are not doing so anymore. So some still are. And we've had, as far as I know, 161 mortgage companies go under, and my estimate last November for the end of this year was 200, and it looks like we're not going to make it, but I was pretty close. And then I think what we're going to start seeing, what we saw in 1987 and 88, was a lot of banks are going to start going under and being absorbed. And it'll be done quietly. But I think it was 1988. We had about 250 banks go under, most of them medium to small-sized banks. And that's going to happen again. And that's why, you know, when we counsel people, and which we do free for subscribers, we don't charge them for that. Most people either, you know, want to be out of dollar-denominated assets. And so our favorite is gold and silver-related assets, and for those people who have lots and lots of money, they might get into managed foreign exchange accounts, or they might buy Swiss franc government bonds. It all depends on how much risk they own or assume, if any at all. And so that's the evolutionary process. Now you want to know where is it going. It's just going to get worse. And lowering the interest rates is not going to help. And what they've done in lowering the rates is that they destroyed the value of the dollar. They've abandoned the dollar. Now, the dollar closed 77-something. That's on the USDX. And what that USDX is, it's an index of six other currencies versus the dollar, major currencies. And it's on a trade-weighted, it's on a weighted basis. And that was at 95 to 100 a few years ago. Long-term support level on that was 80. It's been broken. Next stop is 72, 75. I think eventually it will drop into the 40 to 55 area over the next 2 to 3 years.
And what you're really talking about, of course, is the destruction of the value of the dollar as far as international trade. And of course, what we're going to then see is a really tremendous inflation here, just simply wiping out the value of the life savings of most Americans. Is that right?
It is. And one of the interesting things is that for the last 2.5 years, all currencies have been losing value versus gold. And that's why other currencies really aren't the answer. the answer is gold or silver-related assets, because we're entering a hyperinflationary environment. And when you see the Fed doing what it's doing, to bail out the banks from Wall Street because of their greedy behavior.
And even Alan Greenspan thinks this is a terrible, terrible idea. We'll be back in just a moment here. Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Well, Alan Greenspan is the one who was responsible for causing the whole thing in the first place. But I must admit that Alan Greenspan is a dummy, and he...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, and that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Fairly good coverage. I think it certainly was fair, and it's my understanding. I didn't actually see it, but I was told about it. Why it made Ron Paul, who is the only candidate running for the presidency at the present time, who wants to get our troops out of Iraq now, who wants to do away with the Federal Reserve System, who wants to do away with the income tax, who wants to cover government spending, who wants to do away with the Department of Education and most of the federal programs that are destroying our country and bankrupting our people. He wants to get back to the Constitution. What a unique and frightening concept. I mean, how outmoded to actually believe in the Constitution that gives us our freedom. Well, anyway, of course, I was really encouraged by that, Bob, and I think maybe we're even going to see more coverage of Ron Paul and Dr. Ron Paul in the coming weeks. So I think that we're living in exciting times. Well, what's going to happen as far as the housing market? Do you think it's going to continue falling? Do you think the stock market's going to continue falling? Where was the plunge protection team that ordinarily manipulates the stock market? They weren't there today, and the market was down well over 350 points.
Well, first of all, I'd like to make a prediction, and that is I think if Ron Paul doesn't win New Hampshire, he's going to be very close. And it's going to give him national recognition, and the Illuminati knows that. And so they're starting to give him a little bit of time on TV. I'm on two other programs, and both of them are seeking out the people who are with Ron Paul, and both programs have asked to have Ron Paul on their programs to reach their audiences. And I think if more of us do that, and he has the time to do so, it'll be very powerful. The programs that I'm on collectively probably will reach somewhere between 30 and 50 million people a month, and a lot of them are outside the country, so that's not politically salient. But there's a big reach out there, and we can reach a lot of people who wouldn't normally hear him. As a matter of fact, one of the stations that I'm on, we reach, we're on 145 AM FM stations, and that is about to increase in a large way. And so maybe he'd be interested in getting some help from us, because it's not going to cost him anything. The housing market, the 30 former hot areas are in decline more than any of the other housing markets. And the first to go down was San Diego, and then Florida and Las Vegas are kind of going in tandem. And Arizona and California are starting to get hit pretty hard. New England went down about the same time, just a wee bit after San Diego, and Maryland is now starting to go down. In the former 30 hot areas, we're looking at losses in the values from the peak of houses between 35 and 60%. And that depends upon the price of the house, how much it went up, and the area that it's in. And the upper-level homes that sell for $1 million or more, have been relatively immune up until this point. In time, they're going to get hit, and they're going to get hit hard. And they just don't know it yet. I've been through a number of these, not as bad as this one's going to be. This will be the worst one since the Great Depression. And I distinctly remember the ones from 64, 69, 81, 89 to 92. We had some terrible damage done, particularly in California. And that's where I lived during those years. And I expect California will drop an average of probably around 45, maybe a little bit more than that percent. So that's what we're going to get. In the average place where houses didn't go up, well, they're probably not going to get down very much,
well,
3 or 4 or 5%.
In Japan, a lot of the property values went down 90%. Was that because they were so much higher and much more overvalued than ours were?
Where?
In Japan, where and the housing values really felt, you know.
That's a classic story.
We'll be back in just a moment here with Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Go right ahead, Bob. We're just talking about, of course, in Japan, where their market fell apart, and of course their housing was just so, and the property values were so overvalued that it was said that you could have bought the entire continent of Australia for simply the land that was certainly under the Royal Palace in Tokyo, and you could have bought all the land of the United States for the value of the land in Tokyo itself. So those prices were pretty well overvalued.
Well, what happened was in 1992, we were deeply mired in a recession, and so was in Japan. And instead of purging both systems, they decided that they were going to print their way out of it, or issue credit their way out of it. And it worked in the United States. They were able to do so. But in Japan, they were not. And Japan has been in depression ever since then. And the Nikkei Dow in Japan was 42,000. It went down to 7,500. The value of raw land in Japan went down 87%. The value of housing went down, generally speaking, about 70%. That's what we should have happen in the United States. And if they hadn't, during that period, if they had taken the purge, which we didn't, but if they had, and not increased money and credit, we could have solved the problem. It would have been very difficult for 4 or 5 years, but things would have been straightened out. Japan, they took that money and credit route, and it didn't work for them. They've never gotten out of depression, and we did everything we could to help them, such as allowing them to have a false, very, very weak value to the yen, just like we've allowed China for other reasons to do so. And the problems that existed and carried forth over that period of time of 15 years, which we are now re-entering again, and this time we're not going to be able to get out of it. In 2002, we passed the point of no return, and I announced that in the publication. I said, there's no way back now. And so, there is no way back. There's nothing they can do to...
Hold that thought, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Bob Chapman of the International Forecaster. And before we go on, Bob, would you want to tell our listeners how they could learn more about the International Forecaster, perhaps even get a free copy of it?
Well, the International Forecaster is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And we publish by email on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and it runs 25 or 30 pages. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month as well. And if you'd like to get a free copy, you can go to our site, and that address is theinternationalforecaster.com, theinternationalforecaster.com. You can also get free introductory copies by calling toll-free to 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And if you have any questions, financial ones, portfolios, anything, email us, and that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster Mark@yahoo.com.
Okay, fine. I will tell our listeners that I look forward every Wednesday and every or Thursday and every Saturday to getting that, and it's a fascinating read, especially now as we see the things that we've been talking about for so long coming to pass. And certainly one of the things that's happened is gold has certainly beginning to break loose, and they're no longer able to manipulate the price and keep it down. Do you see a breakthrough coming very, very shortly, the way things are going?
Well, I think we'll see a few more blips here, but we're headed to 1,000. And the situation right now in the gold market is that the commercial shorts, these are the people who make markets in gold futures, they are short a record number of short positions. And the only thing that can get them out of that is if central banks either lease or sell gold. And leasing gold, let's say from the Bank of France to J.P. Morgan Chase, is the same as selling it, because when Chase gets the gold, they sell it, and then they in turn take the money and do something else with it for a period of time. And then what they do is they pay back the lender, the Bank of France, in dollars. And, of course, Bank of France doesn't care, because that was the intention in the first place, to sell the gold and suppress the market, but hide it, because because France continues to hold the gold on their books as having it, when, in fact, the gold has been sold. It's a giant scam, and all of the central banks are doing it with the accedance of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. And so that's the only thing that can interrupt this. And from time to time, they're going to do that. But I don't know how much gold they've got left, if any. Most of the banks have been leasing, and some of them have been selling. I noticed that from the United States, as well as England, they've been swapping gold. And what that means is that they went to somebody, let's say it's the Bank of France, and they said, look, we just sold 10 tons of gold and we can't make good delivery, because the gold we've got is old coin melt, or it's gold that we received on the 1830s or the 1870s or 1900, and that's not good delivery today. So we have to have that refined. And so in the process, would you please lend us the gold so it can be sold into the market? Because you know what we're doing, we're rigging the markets. And, of course, the other central bank says yes, because they're all partners in crime together. And so we know, because both England and the U.S. don't have good delivery gold, they're at the bottom of the barrel. So if somebody else is going to be a seller, it has to be somebody else. And so I think they're running into a situation where they don't have much gold left for sale, and the game will soon be over.
All right. In other words, you're anticipating a marked increase in the price of gold here relatively soon.
Right. And I think that just to make up for inflation, if you use official figures, it's $2,100 for gold. If you use my figures, which are real, you're looking at $2,500. Harry Schultz is calling for $1,600. Jim Sinclair, $1,650. These fellas have been around as long as I have. In fact, Harry Schultz is 84, and I think Jim is 73. He's a year older than I am. And fortunately, we've all lived this long, so we're kind of the venerable deans of what's going on out there. And that's a guarantee on the price of gold. You're looking at a triple from here.
Well, now,
the question is, how crazy will the market get? And markets always do things that they're not supposed to do. So we could be looking at 3,000 to 5,000. Who knows?
Well, I've noticed that certainly it was bid up to 779 in Dubai today, and Sydney. So that we usually look at Dubai and see what the market is in Dubai, and then you figure America's going to be there in a relatively few days. So
we get a lot of feedback from Dubai. One of our subscribers is a gold dealer in Dubai. And he's forever sending us emails, some of which you see in the publication. And so we get pretty good feed from there.
Well, now, what about silver? Certainly silver has not been doing as well as we might have hoped. As the gold has been moving up, silver's been 1350, 1380, 1320. Do you think that they are still manipulating the price of silver as well?
No question. Now, silver is easier to manipulate. It's a smaller market. And there are four of the seven or eight major silver commercials, dealers, traders, whatever you want to call them. And they are working with the United States government, just like the commercials are in the gold market. And they have been suppressing the price of silver for a long time. And there's going to come a time when they can't do it anymore. And silver will catapult. And silver looks real good. And I think silver, if gold can go to $2,000 to $2,500 an ounce, silver certainly can go to $100.
All right, fine. Well, I think that people have to understand that everything is manipulated, that the world economic system is really controlled by the central banks that really direct the cause and the course of governments. And anybody would like to verify that, the book would be the one written by Professor Carol Quigley, who is Bill Clinton's mentor. The book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, was suppressed for many years, and we have an interview with Professor Quigley where he tells the story of how his book was actively suppressed. But on 324, he simply tells you that the central banks of the world have secret meetings, and they plot to create a feudalistic system throughout the world under their control. And that's exactly what's going on. They're manipulating the stock market. They're manipulating the silver market. They're manipulating the gold market. But, Bob, why do you think that they didn't intervene today to stabilize the stock market? Do you think they're just going to let it drop another few thousand points?
Well, you know, there are days that it's beyond their capabilities. And I think one of those days was today. In fact, the market actually closed very weak. I'm an old tape reader, so I get a good feel on how markets are doing and how they close. And it was weak, so unless something extraordinary is done over the weekend, Monday will open up weak as well. They know they can't indefinitely hold it up. One of the things that's been driving the market is liquidity, and liquidity that's been created by the Fed, but liquidity also that comes from the yen carry trade. And for those of you who don't know what it is, a bank in New York would borrow $1 billion worth of yen from a Japanese bank, and then they would turn it into dollars, and then they would lend it out at 8 or 10 to 1 to investors such as hedge funds, etc. And so this creates a tremendous amount of money that's available to go into markets. And if you add in the hundreds of billions of dollars, actually, we're at physically at close to a trillion in money and credit that's been created just by the 20 largest central banks. And much of that can be lent out at 8 or 10 to 1. And so goodness knows how much money's out there. And that is what's been making the market go up. But I think finally, London, the city of London, as it's called, and Wall Street are catching on that people like me have been right all along, and the markets are being manipulated, and that the underlying forces within the banking system and in investment banking are in serious trouble. And that's what sent the market down today. Professionals are scared. They're finally realizing that this is not going to go away. And it could begin a larger slide. And I think it probably will. And that's irrespective of all that money liquidity that's out there, and it could feed on itself. On the other hand, the Fed and the Working Group in Financial Markets, which is run by the Secretary of Treasury, they work together in rigging markets. They just might create more money and run it back up again. And they've done that before.
Well, they have, recently. But of course, this is highly inflationary. And when you talk about almost 14.5%, inflation next year, 11% this year, and then you look at what other countries are doing. And I was reading, and I've forgotten the exact figures, but it looks like China's increasing their money, about 30% a year, and Russia's, 35-40%, and Venezuela's increasing their money 69% a year. And so much of the, even Europe is increasing the amount of money in circulation. And this is highly inflationary. You can't do this very long before the value of all world currencies begin to crumble.
And they all will against gold. And the dollar will be the leader on the downside of all the major currencies. And the strongest currency will be the Swiss franc. But this slide is now inevitable. The banking problems are inevitable. And it's only a question of whether the banking system in toto collapses. And it could very well do so. We don't know for sure as yet, but it does not look good. And so that's why we have tremendous amounts of people subscribing to the Forecaster, because it's only one of a handful of publications in the world that will tell you the truth. And as Harry Schultz said to me recently, you've got more guts than anybody I've ever met.
Well,
and
I'm
insane. And I don't think so.
Well,
there's just some people in this world who will take the battle to the enemy. And I'm one of them.
Well, I think that, of course, the people on the other side are worried that the American people are going to realize that there is a small group who has an agenda, and that is to destroy the value of the dollar, and the process, of course, to impoverish our people, and with the hope, of course, that they will accede, they'll be willing to give up their freedom and accept the New World Order, which is the objective and goal of the globalists and the Illuminati, or call them what you will. The Illuminati was simply one of a number of organizations that all were working for the goals of the ancient mystery religions, which for 5,000 years has been to create a world government, a new world religion, and of course the coming world leader. So anyway, I think that, of course, that everything points to the fact that they're going to destroy the value of the dollar, and when they do, well, the American people are going to be the vast majority of them will be totally impoverished. Would that be a fair statement, Bob?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, what's behind this whole thing is the destruction of the financial system of the Western civilization so that they can force people to accept world government. And it's not going to work. And their chances of this now being successful are virtually zero, at least within the next 30 to 50 years. We've stopped them dead, and they've helped us, because they messed the whole thing up. And it's not the first time they've done that. This has been going on for 1,000 years or more. And so what we have to do is try to salvage our system. And I think we can do so. But we got to have people who are different in Congress, and we got to have somebody leading the country like Ron Paul.
We need somebody who believes in the Constitution, and there's not one of those candidates, either in the Republican or the Democratic Party, other than Mr. Paul, who actually believes in the Constitution, has really spoken of it, and every single one of them want to continue this insane war in the Middle East, and some of them even want to bomb Iran. That's how we're going to get out of the problem with Iran. We're going to bomb Iran. And certainly, in fact, none of them are even talking about torture, except maybe John McCain. He thought torture was wrong because he was tortured when he was a POW. But so many of the other candidates support torture. And where is the outcry from the American people about men of this caliber running for the presidency of the United States?
Well, I think you've got to understand we've had, at least in modern history, in the last 40 or 50 years, children have been deliberately dumbed down, and now they're adults, and they're dumber than they should be. They didn't get the education they should have, and they were socialized. And then you have 55% of the American population that is functionally illiterate. And so, after the fact, you can probably educate verbally half of the people who don't know what's going on, nor do they care. And so that would bring you to a point where you would have been able to make 80% of the public in finality realize that something drastic and detrimental was going on. But it's extremely difficult because of the kind of intellect that you're dealing with, or lack thereof.
Well, I really
in every country the same.
I really think they've intentionally damaged the minds of our children. I think they know what they were doing. And fluoride, aspartame, mercury, they know how to damage a mind that it will never be the same. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. We're just wrapping up our program with Bob Chapman. Whatever happened to Rainy River? Is that doing all right?
Yeah, it's still up there. It's still doing good, and some of the other stocks are as well. The producing gold stocks are doing extremely well. They're off their highs, but, Rome was not built in a day, and it's going to be a long process. And I think people who are involved in gold and silver-related assets should be very patient. They shouldn't be trading the market. They should get long and stay long, although you can make changes as you go. By and large, you just have to wait, because this is not going to happen overnight. And if you keep that in mind and don't watch your stocks or your coins or the gold price every day, you'll be better off for it, because it's up to people like me to be able to help you to do those kind of things. And it's a lead pipe sense that you're going to be able to retain or even make money on some of your assets. So you're less than 5% of the people in Europe, Canada, or the United States who know what's going on, because the rest of the people don't and will never get involved, and they'll lose 60 to 70, 80% of their assets.
And that's really what I feel so terribly bad about. But, you know, Bob, we just got a letter today from one of our supporters who was just saying how much they appreciated your message and certainly what we do here, because they've helped them prepare for the difficult times. And I don't know what they've done, but I suspect they've followed your advice, and they're seeing, of course, things are much better for them. And yet, of course, so much of what's going on today is going to lead to disaster for the vast majority of the people out there across America. And so, you know, do you think that right now people ought to sit on the sidelines as far as getting those gold stocks? Do you think they may drop a little bit more in this downturn in the market?
You buy some more.
Okay.
You buy the dips. And we got a long way to go here. It's 2 or 3 years, maybe even longer. And just be patient. Keep on adding. And it'll all work out for you. This is the biggest, most profitable bull market in the history of mankind.
Well, Bob, thank you so much for being with us. We'll look forward to having you back with us again, I guess, next week or so, next Monday, I guess, on the afternoon program. So
right.
Thanks very much. It's always a pleasure.
You're welcome. Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye. Well, I guess it's been Bob Chapman, International Forecaster. I hope you enjoy him. We have Bob with us in the afternoon on a Genesis program, and, I always enjoy him. I hope you do. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and, of course, our guest this evening has been Bob Chapman, the International Forecaster, and I really do look forward every Thursday or Wednesday or Thursday or and certainly every Saturday to getting his weekly analysis of what's going on. Then, of course, I want to remind all of our listeners that we are having our all-day Radio Liberty Conference on the 28th of October. That's a week from Sunday. It'll be at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course. We'll be opening the doors at about 7:30 in the morning. We'll probably go until 5:30 in the evening. We're bringing in outside speakers. We will have Ron Brown there talking on finance, and we're going to be talking about a lot of things. And be excellent lineup of speakers. There'll be time for questions. And since we're going to be serving lunch, we have to know how many people are going to be there. And so if you're coming, please let us know today or the latest tomorrow as we begin wrapping up so that they will be know how much food to put out. They ask a week ahead of time. They have an idea how many people are coming. So if you're going to come, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We've had people in the past coming, and they're coming back again. They've enjoyed it, and of course, we've got a lot of new people that will be there. It looks like we're going to have a great crowd. So if you'd like to come, why, of course, our number again, 1-800-544-8927. Now, if you'd like to really understand what's going on financially in the world, we have several things we've written. One is called The History of Money. It's a little pamphlet, inexpensive. And then we have a talk called The Financial Tsunami, and there's a syllabus that goes with that that will give you tremendous insight into what's going on and recommendations on what you can do. And remember, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm just a fellow who's been around for 45 years observing this. I'm quite a bit older than Bob is, but I've been carefully observing this for 45 years, and believe me, I've made an awful lot of mistakes during that time, but hopefully we have a pretty good grasp on what's going on today. So if you'd like, of course, to get the talk from the Financial Tsunami, with or without the syllabus, and the pamphlet on the history of money, our number 1-800-544-8927, if you'd like information, and then of course, we also recommend several important books. One is The Creature from Jekyll Island. And I will tell you that we have an Amazon site, and we are just, as so many people are getting that Creature from Jekyll Island book. And, of course, if you ask for it, well, we'd be glad to provide you, along with that, a CD of an interview with Ed Griffin. This is what we're offering on Amazon. And if you specifically ask for it, we'll be glad to send it along if you get the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And then, of course, we have the Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, a book he wrote before he passed away. And finally, the last book we recommend is a small little book written well over 100 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White, who I believe was the dean at Cornell. But, of course, it's called Fiat Money, Inflation in France, because the French tried exactly what we're doing. They tried it back in 1789 after the French Revolution. They thought that they could simply create prosperity by printing paper money, and they were smart enough to do it. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this system doesn't work. In all of history, there's never been a paper money system that has survived, and they all have eventually gone into hyperinflation, as is happening in Zimbabwe today, where the actual inflation rate is 20 to 30,000% a year. 20 to 30,000% a year. And remember, of course, that your State Department and Henry Kissinger installed that Marxist government in Zimbabwe, and it has simply wiped out everything the people had. The people who have a pension, they get their monthly pension, they could buy 3 slices of bread, not even a loaf of bread. That is what happens when inflation gets out of hand. And believe me, we're moving rapidly in that direction. Everything the Fed is doing is wrong. Instead of trying to stabilize the dollar, they seem to be intent upon destroying the value of the lifelong savings of the American people. So understand what's going on. Understand there's powerful spiritual forces behind this. We hope, of course, to see you at October 28th conference. And please pray for Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But as a battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for this hour, they're going to be the views of Bruce Adamson. And I knew Bruce when I was practicing orthopedics. He was one of my patients, and he had won a lawsuit and took the money that he'd actually earned from the lawsuit, and instead of, going ahead and enjoying it or buying a fancy car or home, he actually got a motor home and started traveling around the country trying to track down the story of a man named George de Morneschelt. Now, for those of you who don't know, George de Morneschelt was the closest advisor, friend, I believe he was the handler, of Lee Harvey Oswald, and he was certainly mentioned many times in the Warren Commission report. But de Morneschelt obviously had strong ties to the American intelligence industry, and so were Bruce, are you there?
Can you hear me okay?
You're doing just fine.
Oh, great.
Certainly, George Bush wrote a letter wrote you a letter, and talked about the fact that he had known George de Morneschelt. Why did you certainly write to Bush to find out if he knew de Morneschelt, and what was the significance of the relationship between George Herbert Walker Bush, the father of the current president of the United States, and de Morneschelt, who was, of course, Lee Harvey Oswald's handler?
Well, I knew that one of my cousins was friends with George Bush because he had got me into the Houston Oil Club to do research on George de Morneschelt and George Bush through one of his friends. And he has since passed away in 2003. But back in 1993, I wrote to George Bush saying that one of my cousins was friends of you, and what was your connection between George de Morneschelt? Well, he had no idea how much research I had done, and so he wrote me back, and then I kept on finding out more and more things that...
Well, what did George Bush say at that time?
Well, he said he didn't know of de Morneschelt's any intelligence connections, but then I was circumstantially able to prove that both de Morneschelt and Bush were CIA way back in 1953.
Well, of course, but did George Bush admit that he knew?
He said he knew him since 1942, that his roommate, de Morneschelt was the uncle to his roommate at Andover and at Yale, and that roommate was Edward Gordon Hooker, who was a member of the New York Stock Exchange and also a first cousin to Mrs. John D. Rockefeller.
All right, so basically, of course, then George Herbert Walker Bush admitted that he had known de Morneschelt. And, of course, I think it's important for people to understand that George Herbert Walker Bush was associated with the CIA for many, many years. He was, of course, eventually ended up being the director of the CIA, but he'd been affiliated with that directly and indirectly for at least 20 or more years. Before that, in fact, certainly the Bay of Pigs invasion was named after...
Operation Zapata.
Right. And certainly George Bush was involved with that Bay of Pigs invasion, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. Well, when Castro took over Cuba, Bush had his oil platforms, which housed 75 to 100 men 50 miles north of Cuba. They were perfect devices for landing helicopters and spying on the country of Cuba while pretending to be drilling for oil.
Well, now, how is Abraham Zapruder, for the Zapruder film of the Kennedy assassination, is Zapruder tied to the Central Intelligence Agency and to George de Morneschelt?
Well, they both belong to a club that was founded by, it was called the Dallas Council on World Affairs. George de Morneschelt and George and Abe Zapruder and their wives. And Zapruder had worked with Mrs. George de Morneschelt, his fourth wife, whose name was Jean Lagan, back in 1953 at a clothing store, Nardis of Dallas, in Dallas. And I ran an ad in 1992 in the Dallas Morning News, and they ended up doing a story on it and I wanted to see if I could find any employees who remembered if Mrs. DeMornchel, John Ligon, and Zapruder knew each other. And I found four people that confirmed it, that John Ligon was one of the highest paid dress designers, and Zapruder was the cutter. He would cut the patterns.
Well, what does that have to do with the Central Intelligence Agency?
Oh, well, I guess I got off the track there. That's one connection, but they all belong to the Dallas Council on World Affairs, which was a front for the CIA, and it was founded by George Bush Sr.'s mentor, Neil Mallon. And it was the Dallas Council on World Affairs. Neil Mallon had three floors in the CIA Trust Republic National Bank building with DeMornchel, where DeMornchel had his office.
All right, fine. Now, what was this about? George DeMornchel's father-in-law being a very high-ranking CIA official?
Oh, he's a descendant of President George Washington's brothers, two of them, on his mother's side and father's side.
Now, this is the father-in-law you're speaking of.
Right, from the second marriage. This is Samuel Walter Washington. And they know him as Walter Washington. He was number three, I think, at the State Department. But I won a case when I filed the Freedom of Information Act in 94. And they didn't respond till 2000, 1999, under Bill Clinton. I got from the State Department Samuel Walter Washington's entire personnel folder with photographs, and I wrote a book about it in Hawaii.
And now this is, of course, DeMornchel's father-in-law for his second marriage, and he actually had several hundred CIA...
250, 10 years before the assassination of Kennedy, Oswald's best friend's father-in-law had 250 CIA agents in the successful coup that wasn't like Operation Zapata in Guatemala.
In other words, he was running the CIA operation to overthrow the government of Guatemala.
That's right, from 50 to 53.
All right. Okay, now...
And then at that time, I found a letter from Dimitri von Mornschild, the brother of George, to CIA Director Alan Dulles, who became the Warren Commissioner.
Now, what was the relationship then between DeMornchel's brother and the CIA?
Well, his brother had a lot of ties. They all did. DeMornchel, his brother, had a lot of ties. They were friends with Cecil D. DeMille, who was the head man in Hollywood for the CIA way back in the 50s. He died in 59, I believe.
Now, currently, Lyndon Johnson was writing to George DeMornchel. And what was the relationship between the letter between Lyndon... Well, this is Dr. Stan, and what's very interesting is that Bruce was able to uncover the fact that the Vice President of the United States at that time, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who became president once John Fitzgerald Kennedy was dead. But Lyndon Johnson was writing to George DeMornchel not too long before the assassination. What's the background of that?
Well, Lyndon Johnson was very close to Oleg and Igor Cassini and their parents.
And who were they, and where did they tie in?
Well, Igor Cassini worked for William Randolph Hearst. The Hearst family was the personal news outlet for Lyndon Johnson.
No, right, but I mean, what was the
Oleg Cassini was Kennedy's dress designer.
Okay,
and they were white Russians. They sound Italian, but they were actually royal white Russians.
What was the relationship between Lyndon Johnson and George DeMornchel?
Well, Lyndon Johnson, his name and his 1957 senatorial telephone number was listed in DeMornchel's phone book.
All right, so you had the phone book.
And I did. I got that from the West Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, and I spent 2 years and $20,000 researching everybody in the phone book, knowing that nobody had done this before.
All right, fine. And so what was the relationship between Lyndon Johnson and DeMornchel?
Well, on April the 17th, DeMornchel was writing to Lyndon Johnson, 7 months, 6 months before the assassination, and on April the 18th, Johnson is writing back to DeMornchel.
All right, fine. And that did
they meet on April the 26th, and again on May the 20th, 3 days before Prescott Bush's banking firm, Brown Brothers and Harriman, approved a $300,000 line of credit to DeMornchel, who had no credit.
Now, here's of course the Vice President of the United States meeting on two occasions with with the Mornschild. And then very shortly after the second meeting, why one of the largest banks in the country, and that's Brown Brothers Harriman, incidentally, one of the partners in that was a man named Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the President of the United States today. But suddenly they're giving de Mornschild, who has no credit and no assets, they're giving him a line of credit for $300,000. Why would any responsible bank give a man with no assets $300,000? $300,000 in those days was a lot of money. A
lot of money. That would be like a couple million, I would say.
Right.
And considering that the stock market lost $21 billion the day Kennedy died. $21 billion was a lot in 1963, on November 22nd.
All right. Did we have any idea what de Mornschild did with all that money, the $300,000 he got from
Well, he must have spent it in Haiti. He had three stories on where he was at that day. He was in Dallas.
You're talking about the time then when Kennedy was assassinated.
Right. And then he was on two parts of the island in two different stories, and then he was in Dallas and felt responsible for Oswald. But no, I don't know what he did with the money, but he knew everybody. He worked for Nelson Rockefeller in World War II, and just had ties to everybody that was rich and famous. And it just, didn't hang out with people like Oswald, you wouldn't think, but he was hanging out with him.
Well, I think, of course, he was obviously the handler, the intelligence handler of Oswald. And Oswald, of course, there's a great deal of evidence that he was working for one or several of our intelligence agencies. Now, what was the relationship between de Mornschild and Jackie Kennedy?
Well, de Mornschild dated Jackie's mom, Janet Lee Bouvier, when she was going for a divorce with Blackjack in 1938, when he first came to the United States. That was the year he came, 1938. And he used to teach Jackie how to ride horses, and I found out that Jackie's dress designer, Ole Cassini, was friends, and his brother, Igor, was more friends with de Mornschild. And Mrs. Igor Cassini committed suicide at the time, 2 weeks before de Mornschild is meeting with Lyndon Johnson, and a week before he's with Oswald, when Oswald allegedly shoots at Major General Edwin Walker.
Because he didn't really shoot him. I mean, here's a man who was able to get off three shots in just a matter of a few seconds, and he hit two of them, hit the president, it was in, I guess, in April of that year when of course General Walker, who was a very conservative, a very patriotic American Army military general there in Texas, is sitting in front of a window in a chair, just sitting there, and Oswald sneaks up on him outside the window and fires through the window at the general sitting in a chair, and he misses him. I mean, from a very few feet away, that doesn't make sense. How could Oswald possibly have missed the general unless he was trying to create the impression that he was against right-wingers?
Right. I would agree with that, and it was never really proven that he was the person that shot at General, but he kind of, Marina said that he was kind of bragging about it, and, there's a picture 4 days before the shooting that Oswald signs over with him with the rifles in the backyard. He signs it over to de Mornschild, and that was the day before Mrs. Igor Cassini committed suicide.
All right, and I think what's important is for people to understand that Lee Harvey Oswald was playing a part. He was creating the impression that he was a anti-communist on one hand. He was pro-communist, and that's why he wanted to kill the right-wing general. That's why he was, of course, trying to get into Cuba. That's why he was identifying himself with the Fair Play for Cuba Committee. That's why, of course, he'd gone on to Russia. Everything is to suggest that he is a communist or pro-communist, and that the communists then were behind the assassination of President Kennedy. And to this day, there's many people who honestly believe that. Now, who was de Mornschild as an individual? What do we know about him? Well, he was a white Russian. He came to America, apparently.
Spoke seven languages.
All right, right. She's an extremely articulate and intelligent and sophisticated individual who's hanging out with this young upstart named Lee Harvey Oswald, which really doesn't make sense, does it?
No, not when you consider that he is in company with William S. Paley, the owner of CBS, Charles Reitzman of Palm Beach, that's the father-in-law of the Cassinis, and George Bush Sr., and just he was pretty much just tied to everybody who was anybody.
And so here's this very, very sophisticated white Russian, speaks all these different languages, but of course he's hanging out with Lee Harvey Oswald, which certainly suggests that he's been assigned to Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, basically, what was the relationship between George de Moonshield and Alan Dulles, the former director of the CIA?
Well, as I said in a previous show, is that Alan Dulles, I found a letter that was destroyed by the CIA, that Alan Dulles, CIA director, who became the future Warren Commissioner, wrote to Dmitry von Moonshield on February 27, 1953. At the very time Bush is founding Zapata Oil, founded the company Zapata Oil, and de Moonshield's father-in-law is in charge of the 250 CIA agents in Guatemala. And the letter proves that Dmitry and Alan Dulles knew that their relatives, it would be Dmitry and George, who are brothers, de Moonshield, their uncle, Ferdinand von Moonshield, was married to the daughter of William Gibbs McAdoo, a senator from California and also quite prominent under President Wilson, who was Secretary of the Treasury under President Wilson. And Alan Dulles' uncle, Robert Lansing, was Secretary of State under President Wilson. And they co-founded the Secret Service during World War I, under not the Secret Service for the President, another Secret Service to combat the forces that they were fighting against in the World War, and to protect, like, the stock exchange and things like that. And this letter proves that they knew that, because they arrested a guy named, I'm drawing a blank, but in the letter they mentioned this gentleman that their relatives had arrested, who was a pro-German.
All right, because it seems that de Moonshield was tied into so many people. In fact, recently many people are well aware of the fact that there's a trial going on, I believe either in Great Britain, I think it's probably in Great Britain, having to do with the death of the Princess Diana.
Right, well, de Moonshield, that's another interesting connection, is that de Moonshield, in 1964, right after the assassination in Haiti, was in business with Mohammed Al-Fayed.
Now, first, who was Mohammed Al-Fayed?
Mohammed Al-Fayed is the father of Dodi Fayed, who was killed with Princess Diana.
And, of course, it's the father of Al-Fayed who is actually bringing this lawsuit and saying that Princess Diana and his son were actually murdered. And there's a great deal of evidence that suggests that they were. In fact, there's apparently they were going to get married. They'd spent the afternoon before the Diana's unfortunate death, buying rings, and there's many even rumors that she was actually pregnant at the time. We don't know. But I'll tell you one thing, and that is that the CIA absolutely refuses to release the file that they have on Princess Diana. And so the father's bringing a lawsuit.
700 pages.
But of course, the 700-page CIA secret document on Princess Diana, why are they keeping it secret after all this time? But here we find de Moonshield. Now, what was his relationship to Al-Fayed?
His daughter was having an affair. Alexandria de Moonshield was having an affair with Mohammed Al-Fayed, and the CIA was monitoring this affair. And Mohammed Al-Fayed was representing El Amir Atta, which is the same name as the father of the lead hijacker, Mohammed Atta's father. They both were born in Cairo, Egypt.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, de Moonshield's tied into just about everybody. But, of course, they cannot let the American people know that it was not Lee Harvey Oswald that killed the American president. He was the patsy to take the fall for the real culprits. Well, what do you think are the motives as to why President Kennedy was killed?
Well, there are a number of motives, and that's probably what confuses a lot of people. I believe that there was the Texas oil men, the oil depletion allowance. The Kennedys wanted to reduce and remove 27.5% that these wealthy Texas oil men could reinvest in other companies that weren't oil companies. And that really upset the oil companies, the oil men. I believe the firing of Alan Dulles, a CIA director, over the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was Bush's job, Bush Sr.'s job.
Well, by his job, you mean he was really one of the major organizers of the Bay of Pigs invasion that failed so miserably. Would that be fair to say?
Yes. And he was working with Edwin Pauley, the chairman of the Democratic Party in California. So it's not really political, per se. You know, you have a Republican and Democrats. And then... And Johnson's son-in-law is Chuck Robb, you know, and...
Okay, well, what do you think was the reason for the assassination of President Kennedy?
Well, I believe that De Mornchel's reasons might be a little bit more honorable, meaning that Mrs. Igor Cassidy committed suicide because of Bobby Kennedy on April the 7th, New York City.
Why did Mrs. Igor Cassidy commit suicide because of Bobby Kennedy?
Because Bobby Kennedy, as Attorney General, was prosecuting Igor Cassidy for taking in $150,000 to talk Trujillo out of going to communist like Castro. And a month later, Trujillo was killed in an open limousine, like Kennedy, with machine guns supplied by the CIA.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm not quite understand. Why, of course, would Bobby Kennedy be prosecuting Igor Cassidy?
Well, Igor Cassidy thought he was working for the government because he was tennis partners with CIA Director Alan Dulles, you know, and he went down there to try to keep Trujillo on the right side of the government. And then he formed this corporation and took in money, and then the people like William F. Buckley Jr., who employed George, whose father employed the Mornchel, and Buckley Jr. was CIA too, would have gone after Bobby Kennedy if he had shown any favoritism to Igor Cassidy, because his brother was Oleg was Jackie Kennedy's dress designer.
But Bruce, the thing that I don't understand is if Igor Cassidy went down to talk to Trujillo and to tell him to go along with the American agenda, and somehow or other he got $120,000 or something like that for
$150,000.
Why would Bobby Kennedy prosecute him?
He had to under the Registration Act.
So he was then in violation of some sort of federal statutes before going down and talking to Trujillo and then getting paid for it. But
right, and then their kids were coming home, and it was national press. It was like O.J. Simpson in those days. It was all over the country, and the kids at school were telling Mrs. Cassini's kid, Charlene Reitzman of Palm Beach, that your dad's a crook and this and that, and Charlene begged JFK in a letter to have Bobby stop this prosecution, and he couldn't do it. He didn't do it. He went through it, and Mrs. Igor took her life on April the 7th.
Hold that. Oh, we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we were simply asking Bruce why he thinks that John Kennedy was assassinated. And, of course, one reason was because of this. He had come out against the oil depletion allowance. Another was, of course, that Bobby Kennedy had been prosecuting a friend of the family there, a man named Igor Cassidy, who everything points to the fact he was working for the CIA and doing some undercover work. But that still did not excuse him for violating the law, so Bobby Kennedy was prosecuting him, and Igor Cassini's wife had committed suicide. What other reasons might there have been behind the assassination of John Kennedy?
Well, the Cuban Missile Crisis is one reason. LBJ's desire to be president. the firing of Alan Dulles.
In other words, of course, Alan Dulles hated Kennedy because he had been fired and he had been the director of the CIA. And so Alan Dulles, of course, would want to see Kennedy dead as well.
Well, I believe Alan Dulles was probably one of the main figures of the plot because he was very close to Prescott Bush.
All right, fine. Is there any other explanations for the assassination of an American president? But, of course, they could not have done this without the full cooperation of the CIA
right. And
the FBI, and then, of course, of Lyndon Johnson, who had to cover up what was going on and appoint the Warren Commission not to reveal but to conceal the truth about what really happened.
Well, at this time, you have J. Edgar Hoover briefing George Bush of the CIA on the day after the assassination.
No, well, tell us about that.
That's the document, but on the day of the assassination, you have Bush calling the Houston FBI office, a guy named George Herbert Walker Bush, and the FBI agent that took the report knew Bush's voice, so his name was Graham Kitchell. He would have recognized Bush Sr.'s voice and when he took down his exact address. And Bush said he knew of another man talking about killing the president, but he never told anybody that he had known Lee Harvey Oswald's best friend since 1942. We didn't find this out till the late 80s. So you have that, and then Prescott Bush giving to Mournchill the $300,000 line of credit, and then Bush's roommate at Andover and at Yale, Edward Gordon Hooker, member of the New York Stock Exchange, being business partners throughout the 1950s, part of the 1950s, with George de Mournchill. So,
but what's the significance of that?
Well, anybody having prior knowledge of an event like the New York Stock Exchange, for instance, de Mournchill was friends with JFK's landlord, a guy named C. Michael Paul, that owned the property in Palm Beach, two doors away from Charles Reitzman's house. And C. Michael Paul was very fond of Charlene Reitzman Cassini, who committed suicide. And he owned Kidder and Peabody. You ever hear of that?
Sure.